muji gotu kille sobit gotu tu kasini alta bakli tu folachi sobai kulo bachi tu kasi pinchaita dani muji gotu kille sobit gotu tu kasini alta bakli tu folachi sobai kulo bachi tu kasi pinchaita Chahulo tita, jimiento moja wantu tita, muga ketu chahulo tita, jimiento moja wantu tita, muga cheyam che par gache sode, sopta te lagna pude, muga cheyam che par gache sode, sopta te lagna pude. Ni muji gotu kitle sobit gotu tuka sini alta pakli tu fula chi sobai kulo bachi tuka se pinchaita Ni muji gotu kitle sobit gotu tuka sini alta pakli tu fula chi sobai kulo bachi tuka se pinchaita
Yes, I did.
How difficult was it?
Difficult? Why would it be difficult?
Didn't you say you only had 10% deposit for your house?
10% is enough if Mortgage Masters is helping you with home loan.
Mortgage Masters can also help you with refinance or with any rental and commercial property related question. Contact Nathan Saminathan now, a certified financial planner and authorized financial advisor with over 30 years of experience in New Zealand. Call now on 0800-630-7171. Address 619 Dominion Road, Mount Eden or visit mortgagemasters.co.nz.
Namaskar and swagat karta hau Richi tumka aiche sushega danpar konkani programmer. मुझे संगत आज आसात आमची गेस्ट डॉक्टर रंजना गुप्ता ताचे संगत जेवियर ब्रिगेंजा दिनेश फोनसेका आणि हेक्टर डिसूजा चीचे संगत चर्चा करूं. टैक्स इज अ वेरी कंटेंशियस सब्जेक्ट एंड इन एवरी कंट्री पीपल आर ऑलवेज अपसेट और नॉट वेरी हैप्पी विद द टैक्स रेजिम एज सच. So we have Dr. Ranjana here to share her ideas. She's a lecturer, a senior lecturer at tax lecturer at Auckland University of Technology. And she has authored many articles on taxation And Hector and myself had the privilege of being taught by Dr. Ranjana when we did our bridging papers for chartered accountancy.
That's right.
So welcome to our program, Dr. Ranjana. Welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Okay. So tell me, doctor, why did you go into the subject of taxation? Why have you taken it as a matter of passion when people want to run away from it?
I enjoy teaching tax and learning more about tax because from my background, I'm an accountant. And accountants, of course, I presume they need to know about tax to manage their affairs and their clients' affairs. And it is good to know how to minimize your tax liabilities.
So what do you think about the New Zealand taxation? Is it a fair taxation system compared to the other jurisdictions or other countries? Or do you think it is a bit onerous?
In my opinion, New Zealand tax system is very fair. We have a broad-based system with different tax rates. And our tax system is one of the good ones, and specifically the GST is one of the good ones in the world.
So most of us are individuals. Most of us are salaried. There are a few people in our community who are actually into business as such. So what is your view on the taxation for business people and the taxation for salaried employees? Most of us have a perception that the salaried employees are not treated well.
I do not agree as such on this point that salary people are not treated on the same ground or equally as business people. Yes, business people have to work out their income and after deductions and work out their tax liability. They do get deductions for the expenses they incur in carrying out their business. Salary people under the Income Tax Act are not allowed any deductions except the deduction for income protection insurance they pay and if they pay any tax return filing fees.
Okay. So businesses, of course, as you said, they get deductions for all the expenses which are incurred for purposes of earning the business. So which is fair enough. The sales which they get, they have to incur expenses, so they get. But salaried people also, in order to earn the income, they have to fuel costs and then they have to incur clothing and other expenses, but there is no such deduction for them, isn't it?
Look, business people also do not get deduction for fuel cost or clothing. They are private and domestic expenditure. Business people get deduction for the expenses which they incur to derive business income, which has relation to derivation of business income. Everyone has to wear clothes when they are doing work, whether I'm a salaried person or I'm running a business. We all have to get to the workplace, drive, pay for petrol. It doesn't matter whether I'm running a business or I'm an employee.
So the only way is for the employees is to ask the employer to give them uniforms, perhaps.
No, uniform is different. Wearing clothes is different. If my employer wants me to wear uniform, which has my employer's logo, then my employer will get the deduction because by providing me the uniform with a logo, my employer is marketing his business.
Correct. Okay.
I think the question you're asking, Richard, is, the view that people that work feel like their take-home pay is a lot less. Their percentage of take-home pay is a lot less.
Yes, that's right. That's
compared to people who have a business, and their percentage of take-home pay is a lot less. I'm not a tax professional like Dr. Ranjana, but I think from a business perspective, I would say that if you can start a business and you can contribute to the economy, and that allows you to employ people and give them jobs, and you can sustain that business, then I think in some ways you deserve to get a bigger slice of the cake to take home.
Mm-hmm. So that works on the principle of a progressive taxation, that those who earn more get a good amount of deduction, but they pay more amount of tax also. Is that right to assess and say that?
No, I will not agree with that, that those who provide or contribute more get more deduction. No, it is not more deduction. Those who earn more, they have to contribute more to the tax system. Okay. And that is why they come in a higher tax bracket.
Okay.
Deductions are related to the expenditure you mm-hmm. incur in deriving income.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. So that's so well established.
That's fair. So what would be the things that you would advise or rather recommend to people who are on salaries and those who are running their business? What are the areas that they need to concentrate on so as to comply with taxation laws in this country?
Look, those who are in business, they have to file their tax return, IR3. They have to prepare their income statement, work out their income, sales, or whatever source of income they have, and claim the deductions which have nexus to relation to derivation of that income. File the return and pay their tax. Whereas if someone is only an employee, has no other source of income, maybe some interest and dividend income, then they are not required to file a tax return.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting. So I think, Dinesh, you had a similar type of a question, isn't it?
Well, my question centered around something, I guess, related to that, and that was a lot of people working when it comes to PAYE, when it comes to paying their tax, is it their duty as an employee to ensure that they are paying the right amount of tax, or is it their employer's duty?
Look, the main duty is the employer's duty. When employer pay any wages or salaries, they must deduct the right amount of PAYE.
Pay as you earn, is what they
pay
say.
Pay as you earn.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that is why employers at present are required to file monthly schedule.
Yep.
And they have to file a schedule of deductions, IR 345, mm-hmm. on the 20th of the following month.
Right.
And that's going to change from April 1, compulsory for all businesses. Now, what the employers are going to do is it will be called as payday filing.
Okay.
So under the new system, the day the wages will be paid, within 2 days, the whole information through my IR will be submitted to IR.
Okay.
Payment dates still will be the same.
Oh, okay.
So the effect of that is now IR will get more detailed information, and at the same time when the employees are paid, about the employees.
So what you're saying, Doctor, is that the monthly schedule, IR 348, will be substituted by a pay date set within 2 days of the pay date.
Yes.
But the date of payment of the tax deducted from employees will continue to be the 20th of the month, or if they're paying half monthly, whatever it is, it will continue to be the same.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay. Understood. Yeah.
I just have a question for a common salaried person. It may be a silly question, but is there any benefit for the salaried person? I mean, even if he's paying tax or taxes going from his income, does he get any kind of a benefit in these hard times, like, you know,
deductions something back?
Just to compensate the high rise in petrol prices and stuff like that, just for a common man, would there be something that he can...
You're talking about financial difficulties.
Financial difficulties, yeah.
For financial difficulties, what I could say is, if someone is really on the low income side and paying tax still because he or she is an employee, up to $48,000 if they are earning, they get $10 per week tax credit. And actually, that is up to $44,000, and it abates for every increase in dollar. And at 48, it becomes zero. Mm-hmm. So that's the credit available to those low-income earners.
The $10 is per week or per fortnight?
Per week.
Per week, okay. Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
And it is built in PAYE for those people. They don't need to file a separate tax return. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Okay.
I was doing some research a couple of days ago, and I came across just tax credits. And I think people who are low income tax earners, or maybe who are looking to also start a family, might benefit from this, and it was called Best Start Tax Credits. What are those?
Best Start Tax Credits.
Yeah, I think from what I read, it was a payment to help families with the cost of a child in the first 3 years.
I've not heard about it.
Oh, even I have not heard about it. Have you heard about it, Doctor?
I have no idea. For the first child, people do get some benefits, but people do get family tax credits according to the age of the child and number of kids. Mm. Working for family credits.
But apart from that, is there any expansion on that, Dinesh?
No, I mean, you know, when I was studying tax and advanced tax back in uni, we studied about tax credits, but I'm... it's all hazy to me, but I was thinking, you know, again from, I guess from a millennial, if you had to call me that, and from, you know, someone in their mid-20s thinking about possibly starting a family in the next 5 to 10 years, but also, I guess on the satire side, someone who is on a low income, being a teacher.
That's why I'd be going on strike.
Look, we used to have low income tax credits. We used to have transitional tax credits. We used to have child tax credit, child worker tax credit, but they all have been repealed long back, more than 7-8 years. They have been repealed. Now we only have under low-income credit, the $10 per week credit. And the $10 maximum credit is up to $44,000 income.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just on this, Richard, if there's a time for a question, if there is a person on a salaried person, and he wants to save tax, is it a viable option that if the employer is willing to put him on as a consultant or something, is that a good option to get so you can get more deductions for expenses?
It depends on the whole situation. That means if you want to become a contractor, you can. Employee can become a contractor. Employee will get deduction for expenses incurred in that case. Because he or she is a contractor. And then
but he sacrifices that permanency of a job or assurance.
Correct. Yeah. That he will sacrifice. And in that situation, he may be taking a more risk.
It's a risky thing. But if he's got a valuable skill or real marketable skill and he's very sure of himself, then this could be an option to
so would he get commission?
To become a contractor. Yeah. Yes, I agree. If his skills are marketable, he can work for different people easily, and he's certain that he'll get jobs, then it will be good for him from money-wise to become
commission.
A contractor, because he will get deductions.
Oh. And is the fuel cost from going from his house to that office deductible, or it will not, or is it a controversial thing?
Look, fuel cost from home to the first job place is not deductible.
Okay.
Because income earning activity commences when you get to the workplace, first workplace. After first workplace, when you drive to another income earning activity, then the fuel costs are deductible.
Okay. Right, okay.
So you have to have number of contracting jobs.
Yeah. So like a plumber, he goes from place to place. Those are those fuel costs are all. But if he goes to his office, that is not deductible.
Yes.
That's the distinction between
correct.
That.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, we talk about deductible expenses. So in as Hector was saying, if I'm a plumber and 100% of my business-related expenses, like petrol, if I'm claiming my petrol and I claim, say, $90 in a week, do I get that $90 back at the end of the year? I mean, how does that work?
Look, you have to prepare your income statement. Income statement means how much you earned by rendering plumbing services income. Less deductions. In under deductions, you will have your petrol and other materials you purchased to do your work. All expenses relating to your plumbing work, you will minus that and work out your assessable income. And on that assessable income, you will work out your tax liability, because that becomes your taxable income.
Ah, okay. So even if you claim $90 back in that week, there's a formula, and at the end of that formula, you don't necessarily get your $90 back that you've claimed, because you know you have your income and then you have your deductible expenses. And then you get a total, and then that total there's a percentage out of that total that you get.
Yeah.
Would I be right in saying that?
Yes. Perfectly right. Well, so a simple maths, those who are very conversant with maths, as to how much do I sort of get back would be 1 minus the tax rate. So 72%, if your tax rate is 28, so it is 72% of your $90 as such is the amount that you'll get. So that's the tax shield, as what they call it. But you're right. The way you explained it is perfectly the way to go about.
So basically you're paying tax on your profit, on your net cash flow, you can say,
kind
of loosely speaking.
So before we just break for a song, Dr. Ranjana, a quick question. You talked about the individuals who are employed as such. What is the precaution that those who are self-employed, or like Hector was talking about, a contractor as such, what would the precautions that they need to take to prepare their IR3 forms and to keep their books of accounts? What is the things that they need to be careful about? Because they have to file an IR3. A salaried person is not required to file an IR3.
If only salaried and interest and dividend, but if they have investment property, for example, then even salaried people have to file tax return. Yes, business people have to file tax return, pay the tax, and make sure, of course, they have to deduct and pay PAYE if they have employees, and if they are providing any non-cash benefit to any of the staff member, employee, they must file fringe benefit tax return as well, every quarterly or annually. And besides that, another important thing for business people is that if their residual income tax for the preceding year is more than $2,500, then on the base of their estimated income, or they can opt for a standard option, they must pay provisional tax.
Right. So that's a very sort of a touchy subject called provisional tax, isn't it?
Provisional tax is like a tax in advance, and it could be paid on a standard or estimate base, which is could be 3 installments in a every year, or it could be if you are using the GST method and you are 6 monthly GST return filer, then you will be paying two times, two installments of the provisional tax. And if business people are carrying on taxable activity and their turnover is more than $60,000 in 12 months' time, then they must register for GST as well, and they must file their GST return depending on their turnover. It could be 6 monthly, it could be 2 monthly, it could be 1 monthly, depending on their supplies in 12 months' time.
On that note, Ranjana, let's listen to some music, okay, till we sort of digest what we have told about, because Hector is trying to be a contractor.
Yes.
अरे कजर पहले 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 पाउटे बैठता ना तिचा सोबा एक पिसवंग लड़े मोग 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 मुनुन पटले वेताना एकाच मारार मोगार पे पोटले उप्राम से जारा नी वोटुक मेलोन माटो खालो रे पत्री नमचे कजर केले तशे कजर जाऊन बायले संगीत जी येताना सोवी स्वरा बोटले जलो ने अरे कजर पहले 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 पाउटी बैठताना तिचा सोबा एक पिसवंग गेलो रे मुनन पटले वेताना एकास मारार मोकार ते पटले उप्राम से जारानी वोटुक मेलोन माटो खालो रे पद्री नम्पे काजार केले नशे काजार जाउन बायले संगी जी येताना सोवी स्वरा पटले जलो ने मोगर 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 मुंडुन मोगेलो आवे मोगर मुडुन काजार जलो ने ये दोल पर्यान सगलो सुख खून गेलो ने जीवन सुरू जाव कला क्लबे बाइल पुडी पाउडर कस्तिता इचो बेस किते पोलों दोनी गोले पावाना सगळे बुळे कमक चलता तशे गल्ले ते संभळ पुणी बोरो हटता राज्यात पार्टी येता आता 20 वर्ष संपली आणि काल बदलला काला देखित बाइल बदलिया तीस रात व्हाट्सअप आर मेसेज ओढता
Welcome back to Sushekha Dhanpar. You're listening to Dr. Ranjana Gupta, a senior lecturer in taxation at Auckland University of Technology, giving a good insight into various aspects of taxation. During our break, Xavier, you had a question on provisional tax. You wanted some clarification on it. What is provisional tax and how it works?
Yeah, that's right, Richard. Thank you. Dr. Ranjan, I just wanted to ask you about provisional tax. I'm not very clued up in taxation. That's why I'm asking you this question. So can you tell me exactly what is provisional tax? And a salaried person does pay as he earns. But what about a businessman? I mean, how does he pay? So this provisional tax is something I just want to have a little clarification.
Provisional tax is for business people. It is like tax in advance so that business people like salary people should pay tax as they earn. The idea behind provisional tax is that.
Okay.
And that is why the way provisional tax works is if your residual income tax in the preceding year, last year, is more than $2,500, that means your taxable income. On that taxable income, you work out your tax liability, take away from that tax liability all the tax credits the business may have, like RWT, imputation credits, that works out the tax to pay, or RIT. Don't minus provisional tax from that last year you paid. And if that RIT is more than $2,500, then based on your last year income, increasing by 5%, that's called as standard option, you pay provisional tax for this year income in 3 installments, or you can use estimation method, divide last year income by 3, pay provisional tax in 3 installments, or you can opt for GST option also and pay provisional tax according to that option. And then whatever provisional tax you have paid this year, based on your last year income, that will be deducted at the end of the year from your RIT. And you work out your terminal tax or final tax to pay to inland revenue.
Thank you.
Is it making any sense?
Yeah, it is.
It's a bit of a complex subject. And even those who are qualified struggle as such.
Yeah.
So I guess then, if I had to attempt to break it down, provisional tax is like a tax that businesses have to pay, just like they have to pay their corporate tax. And the you know, addition of, you know, your 5% of your income on the previous year and all the stuff you were saying, that is kind of like an estimation of what they're going to earn for the duration of that year.
Correct.
And then when they do earn whatever they earn, then they look back on how much tax have I paid the tax authority, and did I overpay or did I underpay?
Yes.
Correct. If you have overpaid provisional tax, you will definitely get refund from IR. Mm. If you have underpaid, then you will pay the difference.
You'll also get a love letter from IR.
Yeah. And if you are using a standard option, then you will be safe harbor. It's in the regime. And you will not be penalized for paying less amount to IR. But if you are using estimation option and you pay less than what you should have paid, then you will get penalty as well from IR. So paying provisional tax is very important. It does affect, from business point of view, the cash flow, but IR also needs money, cash. And secondly, I have to emphasize here, a lot of people who are employees, even if they have one investment property and they derive rental income on that investment property, and in that case, if their RIT is more than 2,500, they also have to pay provisional tax.
So legislation is quite onerous, let me tell you that.
So this applies to individuals as well that have property?
Provisional taxes, correct me, Dr. Ranjana, provisional tax is applicable to anybody as per that formula. If it is more than the 2,500, residual income is more than 2,500 after all the adjustments that you made, you have to pay your provisional tax.
Generally, when people earn that much and their RIT is 2,500, they file tax return, they go to an accountant, and accountants will always advise, and people do get letters from Inland Revenue that your provisional tax is due on this day, pay by this date. Otherwise, these penalties.
I'll give you my own example as such. For a period of time, I worked as a contractor. And thereafter, I said, you know, this contracting business is quite uncertain at times. So went back to employment. I still started getting letters from the IRD saying that, hey, you're not paid your provisional tax. Because when I was a contractor, I had to pay it every 3 months, calculate what was my estimated income, and pay provisional tax. So the day I stopped, they started sending me a letter saying that, hey, you have not paid your provisional tax. Then I had to tell them I have stopped working as a contractor. It's almost 6 months now. So then they asked me, can you send me your PAYE statement? So where are you employed? So they have access to all your records. And so I send them my PAYE statements and I told them where I'm employed. Online, they had a check and they said, fine enough. So we'll take you off your provisional tax payment. But I was also there for GST registrations. And so they used to send me letters for you not paid your GST returns.
Correct. If you are GST registered, you have to file your return 6 monthly or 2 monthly. If you don't file your return, you do get letter from the IR unless you cancel, deregister your activity with IR.
Just on GST, I guess I have a question. I mean, you know, I've learned that if you're over $60,000, if your income is over $60,000...
Turnover.
Then you should register for GST. If your turnover is under $60,000, my question is it worth registering for GST? Are there any benefits as such?
That's a good question, actually. Yes, I will say it's good to register for GST. It's a choice, and it is good in a number of situations to register for GST, even if your turnover is less than $60,000 in 12 months' time. And in my opinion, it is always good to register your activity at the initial stages rather than to wait for 60,000 turnover. Because in the initial stages of the business, you buy a lot of assets and other things on which you can claim GST input. So that's the benefit you will get, the GST you pay to Inland Revenue, to pay to the suppliers back on your purchases from IR.
Yeah. So then for businesses that own a lot of assets as they start up or are buying a lot of assets, that would be an advantage to them. Do they get to claim the GST back if their turnover is under 60,000?
What he says is that you can claim on all the asset purchases.
Whatever
assets you purchase to use in the business, on those assets purchases, whatever GST you have paid to Inland Revenue, you will get that back from Inland Revenue.
Yes.
Because they are used in the business.
Yeah, so you'll get a refund.
Yeah. So in the initial stages, yes, that is correct. Generally, people get a refund.
But just, Dinesh, you'll have to charge GST as well on all the people once you register. You have to charge. It's not a cost on you because you have to add it in your invoice and you'll be collecting GST from everyone.
On behalf of the tax authorities, on behalf of IRD.
And another advantage I found also, established businesses will only buy goods or services from people who are GST registered. So it helps you.
Doctor, we just move from GST and provisional tax. There is a huge elephant in the room which everybody wants to know about, and that is investment property. A lot of people have got investment property, not just in our community, but in the wider community as such. What are a couple of things that people need to remember when they have investment property? One, is the way you have structured your investment property. Two is the taxation relating to the investment property, and the new legislation that has been there in existence, the blue line test as such. How do these impact investment properties?
First thing to remember is if people have investment property and they are employees, as I said, they have to file their tax return. So on investment property, if they derive rental income, against that rental income, they are allowed to claim deductions which they incur in deriving that rental income. For example, if they have taken a mortgage, interest on mortgage will be allowed, rates will be allowed, any other expenses, repair, maintenance, if they incur on the property, they all will be allowed. And if they go to the property for inspection, travel will be allowed as deduction. And secondly, if they have purchased this investment property before October 1, 2015, then any time if they sell this property, if I assume they did not buy it with an intention to sell, therefore any gain they realized on sale of this property will not be taxed.
So anything purchased before 2015,
October 1, 2015. If the property is purchased on October 1, 2015 or after that, till 29th March 2018, then to those purchases, the bright line test will apply, and the bright line test on those purchases is 2 years. So if the property is purchased, say for example, on January 1, 2018, then if it is sold by 31 December 2020, whatever gain is realized on sale of that property, that will be
subject to tax.
Because that will be in 2 year bright line. But if the property is purchased on or after 29th March 2018, the bright line test has been extended to 5 years.
Oh, okay.
So if the property is purchased, say for example, today, then from today till 5 years, if the property is sold any time, then on the gain, of sale, tax will be imposed. So this is another way that our Income Tax Act is taxing sale of capital assets, because in New Zealand we do not have comprehensive capital gain tax.
So just before we get into capital gains tax, which you want to get into, Hector, what I'm hearing is if you buy your first home, don't live in it. Rent it out, and that way you get all your inspection costs, you get your interest and your mortgage and all that stuff, you get to deduct it, or you get some sort of deductions from it. And on top of that, don't live in it, rent it out, and don't sell it in the next 5 years.
That's a way of...
Yeah, if you don't sell it in the next 5 years, it is your investment property. Still, it won't be your family home because you are not living there.
Yeah.
It is your investment property. So if you sell after 5 years, whatever gain you realize, more likely, I'll say, you will not be taxed. But I can't say 100% you will not be taxed, because as we know, tax working group had made recommendations for CGT, and they may be implemented from April 1, 2021, then 5 year, even though you sell it after 5 years, you may be captured under that.
Just one question on this. When you said it is taxable if you sell it within 2 years or 5 years, so is there any concessional rate of tax on that, or is it the marginal rate of tax?
We don't have any concessional rates.
Okay.
The gain will be included in taxpayers' income. So, suppose I earned salary $80,000, I purchased a property, sold in 5 years' time, in my taxable income in that year, that gain will be included, and I have to pay tax at 33% on that.
And is the cost, is there any indexation, or the cost of acquisition will be the cost?
Cost of acquisition minus anything you have spent on that property. If you have made any improvements on the property, then you will get deductions for those improvements cost.
Okay. So basically, Dinesh, what you would have heard is very simple. It is immaterial. Yeah. Whether you treat it as an investment property or you treat it as a family home as such. Even in the Brightline test today, the family home has been ring-fenced off some extent.
No, not family home is ring-fenced. It is, under Brightline test, it is investment property.
Property.
Yeah. Exclusion is there for family home.
So the family home is not subjected to the Brightline test as such. So you can live as a family home. But what we need to remember is that if you start treating homes as investments and trading assets as such, then those assets are subject to tax. If
you sell within 5 years.
Yeah, but what the government is trying to do...
If it is your family home, not your investment property, if you are living there, the taxpayer is living there, family home, then they get an exclusion.
So, Dinesh, if you're buying a house and you sell it within 2 years, and you're living in that house and you sell it within 2 years, let's say the price is in, you find that the price of your house has gone up, and you sell it and you make a gain, no tax, if you're living in it.
If it's a family home.
Family home, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, the principle is that are you trading in that asset or are you living in that asset?
Yeah, that's...
If it is trading in that asset, then yes, you're going to pay tax on it under the Brightline test.
But then again, you pay tax based on the acquisition value. So you pay tax based on the value that you bought the house
plus
for.
The improvements as...
If you have paid it for any improvements on it.
So if you've done a major capital improvement, so you add it to the cost, and then what you sell, plus you get deductions by way of interest, etc., that you have paid
or
on the
brokerage
property.
You pay. Yeah, you get deduction for that. But only family home is excluded. But for family home also, you have to be careful. You should not be a habitual seller. So you can't sell in 5 years' time four times family home.
No. Yeah. Mm. then
they'll look through what you're trying to do.
So tell me, Dr. Ranjana, that this is the investment property. Now, people are using the structure of either a company or either a trust, and there is this concept of tax evasion and tax avoidance. So how does this whole thing work? I know we are trying to battle a big subject with limited amount of time. How does this whole tax regime work?
Look, first of all, I'll explain the key difference in the two terms. Tax avoidance is not unlawful, whereas tax evasion is unlawful. It is a criminal offense. For tax evasion, besides fine and penalties, people could be sent to jail, up to 5 years imprisonment as well, because it is breaking the law. Whereas evasion is, you use the law, structure your activities using the law in such a way that it minimizes your tax liability.
That's avoidance.
And you inform all that to IR. But you have done it purposely to reduce your tax liability. Yeah. And as Richard said, that, okay, people use trust or company. Yes, nothing wrong in using a trust or a company structure. They, depending on the situation, they both are good structures. But a lot of people want to use, for example, trust because it is a good way of tax planning, good way of providing asset protection, estate planning, protection to your kids, future generations, protection against creditors. Yes, it is a good way. But it should be done within the limits. Yeah. So if suppose you have formed a trust and in the trust you have the beneficiaries, the kids.
Yeah.
And then you distribute, the trustees distribute income to the beneficiaries. And then the income come back
to another
beneficiary, mom or dad. So I'm a beneficiary in the trust. My kids are also beneficiary in the trust. And I'm a trustee of the trust as well. I've distributed income to my kids who are about 18 years of age or 16 years of age, but they have no other income or very little income. Then they will be taxed at a low tax rate. And it is not for their benefit income is transferred or distributed to them. It is distributed by passing a resolution, transferred to their bank account, but then they transfer it back to me or give it back to me. So then the planning is done not for the benefit of the kids, but for my benefit. And it is something which will not be acceptable to inland revenue.
So it will be tax evasion as such.
I will not call it evasion. Look, that is the difference. I'm still telling IR that this is what I've done. And that is why it is avoidance. I'm not breaking the law. It is allowed in the law. Or sometimes purposely people take corporate trustees or corporate beneficiaries. For example, and corporate beneficiary, this corporate has losses, and that corporate losses, then by giving that distribution, will be offset. Those planning will not be accepted to IR.
So I guess then, if we had to bring it back, tax evasion is doing something that is unlawful, but tax avoidance is hiring a well-educated tax professional
that knows
all the tax loops to make sure that you're doing everything that is allowed, but something that 99% of people don't know about.
Yeah.
That is correct.
But I guess, you know, I studied a bit about trust, but the moment I got into trust in my advanced tax paper, I realized that I knew almost nothing about it. So for the people that, I guess, know even less than I do, What is the purpose of a trust? You know, if you're earning income, why should you create a trust? What is the benefit of it?
The key benefit is trust our idle vehicle to preserve assets for future generations and dependents, to protect assets from your creditors, and to give or hold property in the interest of the person who do not have legal capacity. Someone, a child, for example, in the family is not of sound mind. Mm-hmm. So to protect the interest of the child, to hold the property in the interest of the child, it is good to form a trust.
Okay.
So what are the disadvantages of a trust?
Lots of paperwork.
Lots of paperwork, that's right.
Paperwork,
yeah. And no, then no if that...
No difference in the marginal rate of tax as compared to a company.
No, I will not agree with that. Mm-hmm. If the income is not distributed to beneficiaries, then the trustee will be taxed at 33%. If the income is distributed to beneficiaries, then it will be taxed at the marginal tax rate of the beneficiaries.
It's all coming back now.
Yeah, so that's the difference. Eh? So therefore, if it goes into the hands of a person who's on a lower rate of tax, so the whole sum total will be lower. Mm. But if it is left as such, then it will be at 33%. If it goes into the corporate, high. Then it's at 28%.
That's
the difference.
So I guess my question would be for everyday normal people that are earning, you know, that have a salary and that are earning, that are salaried employees and that own some property, would you advise them to create a trust?
For the property, it is a good idea to form a trust and put the property in the trust, and then you can have your kids or the children as the beneficiaries. So it will protect your assets for your kids for the future.
Dr. Anjana,
don't do it for income splitting purposes.
Yeah.
Okay. That will be avoidance.
Dr. Anjana, we just got 1 minute for you to give your message to our listeners, and then we move on to a song. Do you have any message to give?
Yes, what I will tell the listeners is that New Zealand has become a signatory to multinational convention, which is a global instrument, and more than 102 jurisdictions have committed to exchange of information, automatic exchange of information from July 1, 2017, and New Zealand has started exchanging information. And some of you may have noticed that banks and other financial institutions are asking your identification if you have not provided. So what is happening is, if people are having any bank account in New Zealand but they are residents of other countries, then bank is collecting all non-residents information, providing it to IR, and IR is submitting to their jurisdictions. And in the same way, if I'm living here, I'm a tax resident, but I have bank account in some other country, that country is furnishing information to IR.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Anjana. I'm running out of time. Thank you for being with us, and thank you all for being with us. Thanks our listeners as such. Have a good evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, doctor. Thank you.